as a challenge to our senior management team, I said to my boss one day, let's get all the 500 top managers in the organization, put them all in a room, and let's get some customers to tell them the unvarnished truth about their experiences. And I never thought that he'd buy it, but he actually said, go ahead, let's do it. So we put 500 people in a room. We brought in 7 or 8 customers who were really angry with us. I admit to stacking the deck slightly in my favor. We put 7 or 8 really angry customers who faced down members of our management team by name. They called out people who'd not responded on email or not answered their phone in the audience by name and said, I tried to get hold of you and you never took my call. And they had to stand up in front of those customers and their colleagues and eat crow. It was a very humbling experience.
That's Clint Payne from MultiChoice South Africa sharing the catalyst for their hashtag 99 campaign, a program that was launched by the business as an effort to rally the organization around the customer in a way that was both authentic and inclusive. The campaign was a success for MultiChoice, but it also grabbed the attention of the local CX professional community in South Africa and ultimately led to MultiChoice winning one of several categories at the 2017 CX Africa Awards. For some years now, I've been working with companies in South Africa and other emerging economies to help them realize customer-centric change. There's no doubt that the customer experience profession as we know it now has deeper roots and a larger presence in the mature economies such as the United States and Europe. We could debate the reasons behind this, but personally, I think that the adoption of CX tracks closely with the prevalence of smartphones and the level of customer empowerment, and this just happened earlier in developed markets. Since CX has been around for longer in the U.S., it's not surprising that this is where much of the thought leadership originates. The U.S. is also home to many of the preeminent customer-centric brands that we, as CX practitioners, love to point to as examples of success. Sitting at the far southern tip of Africa, it can be easy to feel removed from the action. One of my motivations for starting this podcast was to highlight and celebrate examples of customer experience excellence from outside of the world's main commercial hubs. This episode provided one such opportunity. In late 2017, I interviewed Clint Payne and Lundile Chauka from the customer experience team at MultiChoice. As context for my international listeners, MultiChoice is the largest satellite TV provider in sub-Saharan Africa. They develop and curate content as well as manage the service delivery to customers. For those in the U.S., you could think of MultiChoice kind of like a blend between Comcast and HBO. For those of you from Europe, you could compare them to Sky. 2017 marked the first year of the CX Africa Awards. As a member of the judging panel, I was pleased with the quality of work underway at organizations in Africa. MultiChoice's award applications were impressive, and personally, I thought that their motivation for the Culture Award, which centered around the hashtag 99 campaign, was particularly innovative. The campaign was championed by Clint, who is their head of customer experience. Clint became involved in customer service operations early in his career, and since then has leveraged his understanding of customers and expertise leading teams to spearhead CX change at MultiChoice. Clint also recently earned his CCXP certification, joining the growing ranks of global customer experience professionals who, like I, have earned this designation. Lundile, the other interviewee in this episode, won the Customer Experience Practitioner Award. Lundile started her career in IT and is a great example of how individuals from non-customer-facing professional backgrounds can become key contributors and ultimately CX leaders in their own right. Lundile utilized her experience with IT and reporting to help the MultiChoice service team establish new strategies for measuring, monitoring, and managing experience delivery. Shortly after our interview, Lundile took a new and exciting CX leadership role at a different company, Discovery. I'm sure that the MultiChoice team was sad to see her go, but we're all looking forward to seeing the waves that she'll be making at Discovery.
Clint and Lundile, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me. I'd like to start off by congratulating both of you and your team for taking the recent Customer Experience Africa Awards by storm. MultiChoice won 4 out of the 6 award categories. I was one of the competition judges, and while I can say that there were many compelling finalist entries, yours were a testament to the excellent customer experience work that has been happening here at MultiChoice.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Clint, can you talk about how long customer experience has been a major strategic focus for MultiChoice?
It started 5 years ago when I was actually brought on board to run the customer experience program. So it started for us in earnest 5 years ago. It's taken a good amount of time for us to get up and running. And you know, I think that the award's a testament to 5 years worth of work, not what we've just managed to achieve in the last, you know, 12 months. It's really been a long time in the making.
And what catalyzed this renewed focus or new focus on customer experience that started 5 years ago?
I can't necessarily say I wasn't in the organization at the time. When I joined the organization, it had made a strategic decision. There was a strategic change that had happened at a very senior level around shifting the focus from being a product-centric organization to being a customer-centric organization. So I can't speak to the catalyst, you know, that would have happened prior to that, but I can tell you that coming into this organization, it was abundantly clear from the start that we were going to focus on the well-being of a customer, and part of my job was to see how we could take that journey.
So then when you joined the organization, where were things? What was the status and how did things progress?
When I joined the organization, the thing that had happened was we had sketched out what our customer journey was, and we had put it onto a big board, and we'd worked out that our customer journey, much like everybody else's customer journey, pretty much centered around, you know, finding, buying, using, paying, helping, and then staying. It's a pretty standard customer journey that we had articulated for the first time at that moment. And then when I joined, my job was to make sure that we rolled that premise and that understanding of that customer journey, we rolled that out across the organization, touch point by touch point by touch point. It's taken us a bit of time, but I think we are there.
And what was the time frame for seeing results?
To be fair, we saw our best year of customer results at the end of our financial year in 2017. So that would have been from April to March in 2017.
Were there results before then? So
yes.
This is something that's been going for, you said, 5 years, and you've been involved for...
For five
years, okay.
So we absolutely have been tracking this over a period of 5 years. And, you know, the truth is that I think in the first probably two or three, it was around positioning. It was around getting everybody to focus in the right direction and understand what we were working towards. And once we've achieved that, it became a lot easier to measure our progress as a group year on year. We saw the big shift in the last financial year compared to the previous financial year, because I think that was the moment that we were able to compare two full financial years with a customer experience view.
Mm-hmm.
We were then able to look at the 2 years and understand how we'd improved from one to the next.
I mean, 2 years is a long time in the business time frame world. Was it difficult to manage stakeholder expectations, particularly senior stakeholder expectations?
A senior, not so much, I must be honest, because the impetus to change came from a very senior level. The senior buy-in has always been something that's relatively easy to achieve. They're the ones with the vision. They've had the vision around MultiChoice being this customer-centric organization all along. So I haven't had a problem getting senior level buy-in. I tell you what has been difficult is sort of middle management. The difficulty, I think, with middle management is when you have been measuring yourself or understanding your success based on a very numeric set of KPIs for many, many years, to suddenly come in and throw something that's very, very qualitative, that's very emotive, very driven from a customer perspective, that sometimes doesn't necessarily make the biggest amount of sense, to throw that into the mix in a middle management role and say, you know, I'm terribly pleased you've managed to connect all these customers, but you didn't do it particularly well. Look what your customers are saying. It is quite a disruptive force, particularly in a successful organization.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of our challenges is that as an organization, MultiChoice has been really successful. And our change doesn't come as a result of us not being successful. Our change comes of us as a result of understanding we need to change. What that means is you have to go to somebody who's going to probably tell you, yeah, but I've always done it this way. And it's working. Look at the numbers. Why should we change this? Those are the two big stumbling blocks that you come across very, very often at a middle management level.
That's interesting. So you have to convince people to make the change.
I also think because I was not involved in the middle management part, the grassroots level, we had to engage a lot with the agents who actually provide the customer experience to the customer themselves. And it was very difficult because they are used to a certain way they measured in terms of the KPIs. So they would have a certain QA rudimentary methodology that they need to follow, and of which they thought that if ever they've ticked everything, they've provided the excellent experience that was needed at that time, obviously without adding the soft skills, without adding the feedback from the customer. The moment we brought back the feedback from the customer, we saw there was a lot of resistance initially because they would say, no, but then the customer doesn't understand it. We're supposed to be doing this. We did FCR, a first call resolution. We resolved the customer's query in this amount of time. They didn't call back or they didn't hold this long. They did not understand the concept of feedback of the customer. So I must say it's been a long journey, but it's been fruitful because now they're embracing it. It's part of the KPIs. So they're embracing it very well. However, they're also starting to live through the voice of customer feedback.
Okay.
So they're taking on the feedback, and coaching is happening, training is happening based on customer feedback. So they're taking that on and taking what the customer is saying and trying to develop themselves to be better for the next customer.
That's interesting. Yep. What have been the most effective ways to help those team members get over that hurdle? Is it through coaching or have there been other measures?
I think now it's been solely on coaching. Before, we used to give them the results and they did not understand how a customer could rate them a certain percentage where they felt that they've done everything that they needed to do based on the QA standards and methods that have been put in place. But now what we do is we're doing coaching. Our real-time solution also allows the team leader to coach effectively at that moment. We're looking at other ways in terms of enhancing the solution and making it better and making it refined so that we can actually measure the effect of coaching and measure other things with the voice of customer. So I think our journey is still long. However, we are making waves now, like we're doing it now. I think, and that's the critical and best part of being in MultiChoice. The change is happening and we're part of the change, and that's the exciting part of it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Nandi's 100% right. I mean, the biggest thing that we've learned every single time is that until you start measuring, you cannot expect anybody to change. The catalyst for somebody being able to understand that they need to change is to tell them how they are doing right now. And it happened when we implemented real-time in the call center. The first time we went to them and said, guys, here's your satisfaction level based on what customers are telling you right now, we saw a jump. We implemented the same thing with our installers. We went out to our installer base, who aren't even our employees. They're third-party people. So these are independent people. We go out to them and say, the service you're delivering to your customer on behalf of us sits here. This is your level. Mm-hmm. We saw this jump. So every time you go out there and you tell them how it is, they improve on it.
That's interesting. Do you think that in both of these instances, that's because it helps those people put themselves in the shoes of the customer and see it from their perspective, or it's just the first time they've ever had anything to measure themselves against? What do you think causes that shift?
Often as customer experience professionals, we forget, and I think that it's worth reminding ourselves. We and everybody who works with us and everybody who takes a call and everybody who's delivering their service to our customer, as much as they are delivering a service, every single day of our lives, we are also customers. So from that perspective, you don't actually need to tell anybody customer experience is important because they are a customer. They know this. Our job is to get out of the way and facilitate how they can deliver it. And I think that if you make that fundamental mind shift, just move out the way and enable them. The key is enablement, I think.
A moment ago, you were mentioning that this is ongoing and it's a program. It never stops. There's no end. There are constantly insights being unearthed and new challenges and problems coming to the surface. Do you find that there's ever fatigue with the team? I mean, you know, you toil away day after day fighting the good fight, and then you go to a braai, which is a South African term for barbecue, on a Saturday, and you see a friend of a friend and they just unload on you about some horrible experience they've had with MultiChoice, and it's demoralizing. How do you help keep that fatigue at bay with your teams?
I feel sorry for my team because I have the shortest attention span known to mankind. Because the moment something's working, my natural instinct is to move on to what's next. So I'm already thinking about what's next for us and coming up this year. The thing that I really love about my team is that they're actually an inspiration to me, because when I think about stuff that I want to do next year, the people that I go talk to of my team And invariably, I get this feeling that we're sort of in a huddle around, oh my goodness, we've got all these plans for next year. How are we going to improve all of that next year? I hope that that keeps it fresh. Who knows? They may all be going, oh God, he's had another weird idea. Who knows?
That's great. So Lundile, customer research is often the first port of call for an organization that is looking to improve customer experiences. The MultiChoice team won the Customer Insights Award, and you also won the Customer Experience Practitioner Award. And I understand that your responsibilities here at MultiChoice have been closely linked to the Voice of the Customer program and research and insights. Can you talk a little bit about how MultiChoice gathers customer insights and then puts that information to work?
So how we gather our data is our customers go through certain events, obviously within the organization, meaning customer would call, visit the call center, for instance, or another thing is customer would pay their subscription, customer would get disconnected or reconnect the subscription. We basically use those events in order to determine what survey that we're going to send to them or what research we're going to conduct. We've got a customer journey map of which we have determined the journey or the experience that the customer needs to go through in every stage of their life in MultiChoice or within the journey. And from that, each event is linked to that experience. So we send out the survey, we collect data, we analyze. We actually do a lot of analyzing. We get responses on a daily basis and we report frequently. What also generates our insights is that we actually use also external research companies where they bring certain principles within the organization for us to try. And just referring to the ward, we use certain principles that they suggested within the organization that we should try out. But using also Voice of Customer and the insights we've gathered, we linked those methodologies together in order to run a POC in our call center. And that is what yielded the success and hence the award.
It's very exciting. So when the organization did this proof of concept and started gathering and analyzing information in a new way, were there any insights or surprising revelations? Anything that popped up that really surprised the team?
I think one thing that surprised me is that if we give our workforce information and we explain to them certain occurrences or certain things that might happen when we do X on the system, I saw that they are crying out for information and wanting to know the whys, of which I believe as business, we don't provide enough information. Just an example, we told them that they need to follow a certain process within the system. We never told them actually why. Mm-hmm. However, obviously, because of agents, they're working with systems, they know loopholes. You know, they've mastered the system more than IT guys have. But the moment we gave them the financial impact of them not following the process, that then they realize that they're actually also affecting themselves. From having that one session, we saw a decline in that behavior. It went from 526 to six, only six occurrences in the month. It saved us a lot of money. And while initially we thought, oh, system, we must block them, let's block them. But obviously because of IT, there's timelines and we knew that the solution would take longer to implement. However, we gave them the information and in a month, we saw a change in behavior. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one thing that we never thought of. So from this proof of concept thing, we actually even saw that the littlest information can actually drive the hugest behavior. It can benefit the organization so greatly, so immensely, without having to invest so much in IT.
And that's interesting.
Very interesting.
So connecting insights to team members' sense of purpose, yes, and understanding their impact on a resulting experience or a resulting process.
I think the future for customer experience for us, maybe in the next 12 months, I would like to be able to connect the agent and the customer closer. From the point of view that I think, as Lundile said earlier, agents are very used to being measured in a particular way. And they're very numeric, very sort of clinical and quite unemotional. It's very black and white. What I would like to do is find a way that we can connect the emotion, the feeling and the need of our customer to the agent and make them understand it from a personal point of view. Because as Lundile says, the smallest amount of information will demonstrably change behaviors in the call center. They are dying to know why and what and how. And I think we talk to them in the context of numbers, and what we get is results in the context of numbers. And that served us well up to a point. But we've moved past. I think we are now in the age of trying to connect on a human level. We need to be talking to them in a language of experience, in a language of emotion, in a language of customer need. And when we talk to them in that need and we explain that with customers in that context, I think just telling them is going to be a fundamental difference going forward.
It will definitely drive change.
Yeah. Also, I wanted to ask about the persona training program in that same vein of helping agents understand and connect with the person who's on the other end of the phone. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me what the persona training program was all about?
So basically, also from our insights, we realized that our agents don't necessarily understand the background of a customer. So they approach every customer in the same way. But also we realize that we have been pushing product information that they need to be upskilled with product, they need to be upskilled with system, but we never really help them in that conversational guide, what to say and when to say it, especially when a customer is feeling a certain emotion. So basically the persona program was firstly try and segment or try and identify the kind of customer that you're speaking to by assessing also their emotion. Because with the emotion, it will help you in terms of how you articulate yourself to the customer, meaning that's their speech style. And also when it comes to the pace, I mean, if a customer is speaking fast, the last thing that you need to do is return the conversation back by speaking fast. You know, there's loss of information there. However, if you're speaking fast and I then respond slowly, it seems like I'm insulting you. So the whole program was for them to match the customer. However, also try to diffuse the bomb. What we said, diffuse the bomb. If a customer is upset, these are the certain things that you need to mention to the customer that will help them come to your level so that they can soak in the information that you're telling them. Also, how to interpret certain things, how to communicate certain things. And that yielded such great success. I mean, we saw the team that we had pulled from the call center. They went from an 86% CSAT, and they went to 96, if I'm not mistaken. And that was the highest ever achieved with that persona, well, incorporating the persona program.
Wow.
Yeah, so we saw that it's a huge need for us to have what we deem our CSAT training, where we have those soft skills. You know, let us equip them with the soft skills. Let us equip them with those a conversational aid so that they know how to converse with the customer.
So we've talked a lot about emotion, which is something that's really important in connecting with customers and delivering great customer experiences and developing that long-term rapport that hopefully then turns into loyalty. Do you ever get pushback from people within the organization saying, oh, emotion, oh, that's just a bunch of fluffy stuff?
Not yet.
Not yet? Okay.
And this is it's a relatively new approach. Well, maybe not brand new, but it is. I think that having spent a lot of time focusing on getting many technical aspects right, moving into an emotional phase of customer experience is going to be an interesting task for us.
And it's difficult to deny these things if you bring the customer experience to the forefront and you put an example there on the table for everybody to see.
I think, though, I must tell you that the approach I want to take here this year is that we must not make the mistake of trying to be everything to every customer and every call. Therein lies the recipe for disaster, I think. A very good example of this is Uber. Uber is very, very specific around where and when they're going to use extra capacity inside of their system to be able to deliver additional services. They don't do it for everybody. And I think we need to take the principle from that. When you are servicing 6 million customers, you can't be everything to all 6 million customers. All that I want our agents to do is seek the moment. Look for the moment. And maybe that happens once a day. Maybe it happens once a week. Maybe it happens once a fortnight. But I just want them to seek the moment when they can completely engage on a human level with a particular customer. Asking them to do it for every single call, I think, is a recipe for failure, because you need to allow for many, many really boring, run-of-the-mill, rudimentary operations to take place in the call center. That's what it's all about. But we need to be getting them to seek that moment, to find the instance of when you can engage.
Yeah.
Be a human.
And I think that that kind of engagement is something that is best when it's truly authentic. Mm. If it's forced, customers can smell that.
They can smell it a mile away.
It doesn't feel authentic. It's not the same. In fact, I think it probably is something
it's
that
worse.
Is repelling customers.
It's completely repelling.
Feels sort of phony and yeah. So shifting gears slightly and talking about bringing the customer experience to the forefront and helping people understand exactly what that is and putting the customer at the center of things. Another impressive component of MultiChoice's customer experience strategy is the #99 campaign. Clint, can you share a bit about this program?
The catalyst for this campaign was actually a customer. We had started going out to understand what customers experience. We did some in-depth interviews. And in this process, we came across a little customer called Mrs. Valentine. Our premium package sits at about 789 rand a month. So that must be around $65 or so.
Yeah.
And in South African context, it's a premium experience. And we had a very misguided point of view that our premium subscriber was, you know, middle class, sitting in an affluent suburb, 2.5 children, three Dobermans and two BMWs parked in the garage. That was our perception of who our premium customer was, until we met Mrs. Valentine. Mrs. Valentine lives on a state pension. She lives in an old railway house. She looks after her grandchildren. She uses her state pension to feed and clothe her grandchildren. And in the backyard of her property, she has two rooms that she rents. And the rent for those two back rooms pays for DStv Premium, our product. And every year on the 1st of April, she increases the price of the room rental by the same amount we increase our services every single year. And just that understanding that the customer at the end of the line is not the person who you think they are, it was a catalyst for an incredibly different point of view. Anyway.
So this is a customer who values this product so much that they're going to make it one of their key purchases.
Probably the biggest purchase they make in a month, without a doubt. So the campaign worked like this. The concept was we wanted to get everybody focused on understanding who their customer was. And we approached an agency and said, right, give us a campaign that's going to make everybody focus on customer experience. The agency came back to us and said, and this is where one of the insights come from we talked about earlier. She said, if you don't know that customer experience is important, where have you been all your life? You are a customer every single day. You don't need to tell anybody that it's important. We know this because we are this. We are customers every single day. And she said, what you need to do is if you spend money on telling 3,000 people that customer experience is important, you'll have spent a whole bunch of money and 3,000 people will know it's important, which they knew at the start and wouldn't have done a thing. Get out of the way. That was the principle of the campaign.
That's great.
So we took 99 problems that we knew customers had. We trolled our Facebook pages. We looked at our Twitter feed. We looked at all of our complaints escalated to the management team. We looked at the core reasons in the call center. And we picked 99 problems that we knew customers had with our services every single day. And the premise was simple. We put them up on a list and said, here they are, solve them. We didn't offer any reward. We didn't offer any incentive. We just relied on people to volunteer and solve 99 problems. And what we then did is as these problems started being solved by the individuals in the organization, we then allowed the campaign to build momentum. So as the first one was solved, we'd celebrate that person, we'd share what they'd done, we'd send it across the organization. We gave our CEO a particular challenge and said, we challenge you to take this one and go and do an installation. And the CEO, a little undercover boss, but went out and did a customer visit. And then he, in turn, challenged the CFO. And as this campaign started developing momentum, we
it's
had...
an ice bucket challenge.
Yeah,
almost, yeah.
Like, like the ice bucket challenge. You know, it sort of rolled through the organization where people were just challenging each other. It was a lot more work than I ever anticipated it would be. It was a huge amount of work. But at the end of the day, it was one of the really great successes of last year. We finished all 99. We actually added one extra during the year. So we actually got to 99 out of 100. So we finished all 99. And when I look back at the stats, it's remarkable. You know, for 99 problems, we had nearly 30% of our organization try and solve 99 problems.
Wow. That's an incredible level of engagement.
And it's a very high level of engagement.
For many of those people, was it the first time that you think they had been involved in solving a customer-related problem?
Yes, for some of them. But I think it's a numbers game. So most of our entries came from our call centers and our walk-in centers. Mm-hmm. But that's a numbers game because that's where the bulk of the headcount sits. But there were a lot of people. I'll give you an example. If you want to see when subtitles are going to be on the content, you've got to effectively turn the subtitles on to find out if they're there or not. It's not obvious. And one of our employees who's hard of hearing and uses subtitles all the time came to us when he saw this problem on the list, came and said, I'm going to solve that one. I'm going to solve that one because I have a personal vested interest on how that actually works. And they developed an icon that appears when you press the information button. If that program has subtitles, the little icon appears on there so that you know this program will have subtitles without having to change the language settings to be able to access them. Little things like that, where people who are not in the call center but have an affiliation or understanding or empathy around a particular problem, reached out and solved problems like that. It was inspiring, actually, some of them.
Sounds like it's a campaign that really generated quite a lot of awareness and I would imagine a buzz and an energy around customer centricity.
And the campaign actually boosted morale because I know that there were a couple of entries from the call center, people trying to resolve challenges that were outside their realm of control, what they've been exposed to. Just thinking about those two guys that went to IT and they were engaging with the IT team and tried to have a solution, and they would never have interacted with IT because their only job is to take a call.
Yeah.
However, because of how they were thinking, the innovative ideas they had, they had to move out of their comfort zone and go engage with the other side of the business, of which they hardly ever do. So I think it also created relationships, but also career aspirations where they know that, oh, okay, I'm actually good at this, you know. Maybe what I can do is get a secondment or try further my studies in this, you know. So I think it actually worked also, yes, for the company, but also for the individuals themselves.
That's great. Something that I hear a lot of times from clients is they struggle with their frontline teams not seeing those roles as career opportunities and not seeing the kind of career progression. So that's a really nice side bonus from a program like this. And I would imagine, too, did it also catalyze more cross-functional collaboration between teams? Has that carried on since?
One of the ways we approached the challenges is that because there were only 99, more than one person was signing up to a single challenge. And there was one channel that had 30-odd people sign up for, you know, for it to do because it seemed like an easy one. When we had more than one person, we'd call the people into a room and say, right, okay, guys, so here's the deal. You want to deal with number 82. And all of you have said you want to deal with number 82. And then that's when we started playing the incentive game. We said, what we'll do for you is that we're going to put a prize on the table, 10,000 rand for delivering this particular solution. Deliver it, and here's 10,000 rand. But here's the option. You can either leave this room and work on it individually, and the first one who solves the problem will win the 10,000 rand. Or if you choose to collaborate as a team, we will take this number 82 and we will lock it for 4 months, and we will give you exclusivity on solving this problem for the next 4 months. We'll guarantee you the 10,000 rand, we'll give you exclusivity to work on the problem, but you have to work as a team. And without exception, every single time they chose to collaborate because they could guarantee, we guaranteed the prize. So there were things like that, the little tricks like that that we did to force collaboration. The other thing that we did is we got the CEO to assign certain group executives or group GM general managers two particular problems. The way the campaign mechanism worked, when you selected the challenge to address, you had to put in a pitch around how you were going to solve it. For us to get an idea of, you know, are you on track here? Is this actually going to work or do you need a little bit of help? And when you were on track, we gave you the go-ahead and we let you run with it. When you needed a bit of help, we sort of called you into the room and said, okay, you need to think about this in a different context because your solution's not going to work.
Okay, so there was some coaching there.
There was some coaching that needed to evolve. And then for those people, some of them, they just said, okay, well, I don't have another option. But others then chose to go on. Because we had that almost pre-authorization or sort of sanity check step in place, we found that there were five or six individuals that had really smart ideas, that we thought this really was deserving of something. And then we went to the CEO. We pitched these ideas to him and said, these are the solutions people are coming up with. We need you to assign them to mentors. And in his own team, he would say, for example, Landile's got a great idea about the call center. And he would go to the general manager of the call center and say, I want you to work with Lundile, and that's the thing she's going to deliver. And Lundile, this is your new mentor. Together, you're going to deliver the prize. So the CEO is also instrumental in assigning high-level support to ideas that really made a difference. I'll give you an example. Your box has got a hard drive in it. And if the box fails, there's still content on the hard drive. And if that content is something that you particularly are attached to, or there's a family member or a great game or something that you want to keep in perpetuity, if the box fails, we swap the whole box out and we give you a brand new one, and it's got a brand new blank hard drive on it. So you lose all of that content. And it was one of the things that was raised by customers as being a particular concern. One of the ideas that came up was building a rack. They plug two devices in next to each other, and then they move the content from your old broken box onto the new replacement box, and they mirror the content for you so that you could keep the content that you wanted to keep. And that solution cost us R1 million to deploy. So what's that? I suppose 80,000 US, yeah. Around about there. It cost 80,000 US for us to deploy that solution. But because it had senior support, they found the budget for it, they found the support for it, they purchased it and it delivered it, and it now is in our Randburg service center. You can walk in with your old box and you can get the content copied over. As far as we know, we're the first people in the world to offer that support. We reached out to our sort of the Skys and the DirecTVs of the world and said, how do you do this? What's your, you know? And they said, well, we don't do that. We give the customer a new box. So as far as we know, we're the first.
Okay.
Who knows? We may not be, but anyway, it's a good story.
That's cool. Were there any of the 99 problems, were there any that you were really happy to see go, or any that you were really worried about that weren't going to be able to be solved?
I'll tell you a small secret. When we created the 99, I was petrified nobody was going to do anything.
Really?
Because it was unexplored territory. We knew instinctively, and we were out of many years of practice, that if you put a prize on the table or if you put some kind of incentive, you're going to get participation. That we always knew. But the point for this is that we weren't going to bribe people to solve customers' problems. The point was getting out of the way and enabling. So rather than dangle a prize at the end of the day, we're going to use the prize-giving power as enablement rather than reward. That's the approach that we took. So from that point of view, we never actually scratched that line. There was one prize we offered on the website from the very first day. We picked the most difficult problem. We said, if you've got the balls to fix this problem, you're scared of nothing and we'll take you shark cage diving.
That's great.
Never got claimed, I have to tell you.
Really?
No. The individual who solved that problem said, I don't want to go shark cage diving. Thank you very much. I'm not into that. But the principle was we actually never offered any reward. I was really scared we'd get nothing. So as part of the selection of 99, I did look at about 12 or 15 that I knew were on the IT development path for the year. So that if nobody did anything, at least there'd be some achieved by the end of the year. Turned out I never needed to worry. And when people asked to solve those 15 problems that were on the IT development path, we included them in the IT development team. So if they came up and said, I want to solve that problem, and we go back and say, it's already in the IT team. Here's the team. Join this team and work with them to deliver it. Can you add value here? Please work with this team. So that's how we handled those.
That's fantastic. I mean, it also sounds like there was quite a nice kickoff for this campaign too, where the whole company was brought together and senior leadership got up. I'm assuming this happened after the raking over the coals session with the leadership team. So they were ready to bring in the troops to help them.
They were ready.
There's sounds like quite a nice kickoff to get people jazzed and excited and show that leadership team was totally behind this. And that must have also been really helpful in terms of getting momentum behind this from the very beginning.
We've been incredibly lucky. Being a media company, we've got great production teams that can help us do some really nice work in terms of video and audio production. So from that point of view, we had the tools to do some really great kickoffs.
That's cool. Do you have any words of wisdom or advice for somebody who's in your shoes in another company in a different sector in another country who's looking at, right, how do I rally my organization around the customer? How can I kick something off that's going to really help catalyze change within my organization? What would you suggest to that person?
The first thing I would say is get out of the way. Enable, don't lecture. And the next thing that I would say is there are going to be people in your organization who are doing exactly what you want them to do. They're all over the show. The silent majority that are actually just making it work. Find those people, reward those people, acknowledge those people, highlight those people. Because what happens when you're in a team of 10 people and there are 7 people that are complaining and there are 2 people that actually just are doing exactly as they're supposed to be doing, if you can identify them, if you can highlight them and recognize them in an official kind of a way, overtly in that space, the people who are previously been complaining about, oh, I can't do this, but I don't have that access and I'm so downtrodden and all this kind of stuff, suddenly recognize that in those people who are sitting in the same team with them, on the same system with the same level of access, there are people who can do the job. And it changes perspective. If they can do it, so can I. And that's what I would say.
Cool.
Find the people who are doing it. There are people out there who are doing exactly as you want them to.
Lindsay Lake, do you have any words of wisdom about this, or also words of wisdom from an insights and voice of the customer capacity, either one?
I would say gather as much as insights as you can. However, also don't just share the bad news. I believe that also for a tree or a little plant to grow, you need to keep on watering it. Obviously, you don't just give it the harsh sun, but you keep on watering it and that's the good feel inside. So share as much positivity as possible from a customer insight perspective. Another thing also, we need to learn to put the customer first. Organizations need to create processes around the customer instead of business rules and organizational bureaucracy and everything else. So put the customer first, because I think we've done that and it's yielded the success that we never thought it would get us to.
Outstanding. Well, thank you very much to both of you for taking the time to chat with me. This has been fabulous.
No problem.
Satellite TV providers, like other companies with subscription-based services, can struggle to realize the same level of customer satisfaction as companies with more transactional experiences. Studies such as the Temkin Group's annual Net Promoter Score Benchmark Study show that TV and internet services, credit cards, and utilities are often among the sectors with the lowest customer satisfaction and loyalty scores. These subscription journeys are complex, and there's a big minefield of potential customer pain points for teams to navigate. No sooner had I casually mentioned to a friend that I had interviewed the team at MultiChoice than I received an earful about an unresolved customer billing mix-up. To their credit, when I forwarded all my friend's details, the MultiChoice team quickly sorted out the issue and probably added the underlying problem to their ever-evolving list of improvements to the customer journey. For me, this was a perfect case in point of a key challenge for the customer experience profession. Sometimes the organizations with the most progressive customer experience strategies aren't those with a flawless customer journey, at least not yet. Each organization faces a unique set of challenges. And when the journey is reliant on a huge ecosystem of different stakeholders and technology platforms, delivering a seamless experience is no small task. MultiChoice's customer-centric change journey isn't over. Clint and Landile would be the first ones to tell you that there's still much work to be done. But I hope that our conversation sheds some light on some of the exciting and innovative work that is underway and inspires other customer experience professionals. For more information about this episode or to subscribe to my podcast, please visit my website, julia-allfelt.com. You can also get in touch via LinkedIn or follow me on Twitter. My handle is @JuliaAllfelt.